Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
You're very welcome back to Thursday's Off the Ball. Johnny Ward is back in studio. It is Dubai duty-free Irish Derby weekend. Why should I be excited about this?
Well, it, you know, clashes with the Kildare and Mayo game for one thing in the locality. It's going to be a busy day in the region.
It's not even the most important event in Kildare is what you're telling me this weekend.
According to the crowd, even with the limited capacity at both venues, it won't be. But it is an exciting Irish Derby. You know, we don't have the Epsom winner. But we do have the hot favourite in Epsom, and we do have the runner-up, and we have a whole host of Irish horses who are going to make it quite compelling. And from a betting perspective, it's beautiful. You have an odds-on favourite, but you have three each-way places if you want to go against them.
Just on the limited capacity. So this time last year, there was a lot of controversy about Derby weekend at the Curragh because there was a tiny crowd because of all the renovations that were taking place, and didn't look like it was a particularly enjoyable experience for anybody who did go down to enjoy the weekend, because I think it is a huge social occasion for an awful lot of people who travel down to the Curragh for the weekend. Are they nearly there with the renovations? Is it going to be a better experience if you're heading along on Saturday?
Yeah, it'll be a lot better than last year. And it has, I suppose, if not halfway there, it's a long way closer than it was last year. Like last year, the Curragh was kind of like it was a glorified point to point, really. It really was. But in fairness, they made the decision to stay there, and that was fair enough. You know, I remember when the Curragh used to get 30,000, but I also remember in recent years it getting like less than half that.
Was that, in hindsight, the right thing to do? Because it does maintain the history of the Derby at the Curragh.
To be honest, I think the major powers in Irish racing, principally sort of Coolmore, wanted to run there because I think, you know, they've been really strong in their support of it being at the Curragh because it's a very fair track. Leopardstown, you have more trouble in running, and I suppose it's interesting with the view to Saxon Warrior. He didn't really seem to enjoy Epsom, but the Curragh is a very fair track. To be honest, I didn't think it was a big deal because, you know, it's only 1 or 2 years, and the gain that we'll get from the pain will certainly make it worthwhile, I think. And in fairness, you know, if the weather is okay, the facilities are actually grand, and it's going to be a fine race course when it's done up. But it's a challenge for Derek McGrath, who would have been involved in rugby at a high level in terms of organisation. It's a challenge for him to get the Curragh back where it belongs, because through its years of dilapidation and maybe just the flat being a bit boring to a lot of people, you know, a lot of people just stopped going to the Derby. And they're doing up the race course for one day, really only a year. They have to get the Guineas to get more than 5,000 people through the gates. They should be targeting at least 10,000 at the Guineas as well and get people back to the Curragh when it's done up.
So peak facilities, Derby, good competitive field. What sort of numbers would you be looking at heading to the Derby in, say, 2020?
I think next year for the first one, I would say it'll sell out, which is something in the region of 25,000, okay. I think. Yeah, but there's no reason not to maintain that. It's a race course laden with history, you know, prestige. You've the best racing in the world. But having said that, you know, Irish flat racing just doesn't really do it for a lot of people. You know, See the Stars running. I think the Irish racing fan is more rooted in the story of, say, Dawn Run, which
the fairy tale,
and the fact that, you know, maybe I could own a good jump horse, you could own a good jump horse. It's a lot harder on the flat where it's very money driven. These Derby horses, the good ones, retire after 3 years of their life, not to mind racing, and they look at, you know, John Magner and Derek Smith and Michael Tabor winning everything, and they're like, nah. They're rich people winning rich men's races. I would prefer Rachel Blackmore being, you know, the National Hunt leading jockey as she is now. And I would prefer, like, you know, Peter Casey or Denoli's Tom Foley and all that. I think they can relate more to it.
Does that ever happen now in flat racing? Is there a possibility in the Derby this weekend that a trainer who isn't backed by one of the big stables, who isn't backed by a billionaire, can win this race still?
Well, this is where the narrative gets interesting, because Jessica Harrington won the Irish Guineas and Ken Condon won the Irish Guineas for colts, and Ken Condon would be a reasonably middle of the road trainer in terms of his numbers. He's not really backed by big powers, so this team could carry out this weekend because there are a couple of smaller trainers, but being honest, all the owners in the race are pretty big time.
And Aidan O'Brien, who's had such incredible success in this race, is at 12 winners already of the Irish Derby, saddles the favourite Saxon Warrior. So Saxon Warrior was a brilliant winner of the 2000 Guineas, went in as a strong favourite to the Epsom Derby, and was beaten for the first time in his career. What's the main difference between an Epsom Derby and an Irish Derby?
Well, Epsom is basically, they pretty much end up going the other way. It's kind of, Epsom's a mad track. Like, really, the biggest race of the year shouldn't be run at Epsom because it's not a fair track. You know, it's very undulating. It's tight turns. The Curragh is really, really fair. It's just straightforward. It's kind of like maybe two football teams playing in good conditions rather than playing in an absolute bog where the relative strengths are kind of neutralised a bit. So having said that, I don't think the track beat him at Epsom. I think lack of stamina beat him, and he's still going to have to go a mile and a half here. You know, the difference between a mile and a mile and a half is obviously half a mile, but that's a massive difference at a top level. Like, that's 50% extra, and you have to take on horses who are dour stayers, so kind of things have to go right. Now, what was interesting about him was, on pedigree, he's by Deep Impact, and Deep Impact is a stallion who won over a mile and seven. So to suggest that a horse by a stallion who won over a mile and seven couldn't get a mile and a half is kind of strange, but his mom didn't get it. His full sister didn't get a mile and a half. And I don't think he does either. I think he's an awful price at odds on.
I was going to say, so why then is there such money on Saxon Warrior, 11 to 8 on favourite right now?
Yeah, it's not even that there's such money. It's just that's the choice the bookmakers are making. I mean, if you look at the race, the horse that was second in the race, trained by Mark Johnson, DXB, he's beat him at Epsom. He's 4-1 and Saxon Warrior is 4-5. I think DXB may have run his race more so than Saxon Warrior on the day. But ultimately, Saxon Warrior was rated, was 4-5 favourite at Epsom. That's why he's so short. Because he was so short then, they're giving him another chance. But you'd have to look elsewhere. You know, Ryan Moore is coming over to ride him. Aidan had a middling enough Royal Ascot. It was okay.
Was he not the leading trainer?
Four winners, you know, over 5 days. I think by his standards, you know, he had a couple of disappointments. He was a leading trainer, but he made reference a lot to how competitive it is afterwards. And in fairness, he's right. It's deeply competitive, but he definitely holds the key here. But I couldn't have the favourite at the price.
Some of that competition is starting to come from his own son, Joseph, who saddles Latrobe in this 20-1, bit of an outsider. Can you explain the dynamic then between Aidan O'Brien and Joseph O'Brien? Are they totally separate training entities, or is Aidan lending a guiding hand along the way? Is Joseph ultimately going to take over?
Ooh, that one's hard to answer. Like, Aidan could live till about 150 the way he's going. He's very clean living. You know, I think he's 49. So Joseph would have to live to sort of 125. But in any event, they do run separate operations though. But there's a kind of a passage of time here in that Aidan took over the yard of Joe Crowley, who is his father-in-law, did various tinkering with the gallops, and then left Pilltown to go to take over his namesake Vincent's operation in Ballydoyle, no relation. And then Joseph came along and started training from Aidan's old place and his grandfather's place in Pilltown. And Aidan has no say in that operation. No more than, you know, my father advising me, you know, on anything. There's no more to it than that. And Aidan and Joseph's very much his own man. The numbers of horses he has is incredible. Only, you know, he's
himself. Where's he getting them from?
All over, really. You know, he obviously has.
But all the Coolmore horses are still in
Ballydoyle? No, not all. No, he would have some as well. Okay. And obviously, then he's JP McManus has been very strong with him. The owner of Latrobe is Lloyd Williams, who's an Australian guy who probably bought this horse with a view to the Melbourne Cup, and he won the race with Rekindling for him last year, who was a 3-year-old. Wouldn't be a million to one that Latrobe would end up in the Melbourne Cup. But Latrobe is also by Camelot, and Camelot was the winner of the Guineas and the Derby and Irish Derby under Joseph O'Brien. So there's one of my favourite things in racing that I really do enjoy is watching horses follow on from their fathers or their mothers and remembering their fathers and mothers racing and seeing traits that, you know, betray the lineage or whatever. And this is a very good horse. And Camelot had two winners of Royal Ascot, which is really good going. So he's definitely not without a chance.
Joseph O'Brien, while I don't want to say getting a hand up as a trainer, but he was certainly, as a jockey, he was cursed by his genes because ultimately he ended up being too tall and too heavy and he couldn't continue. His brother Dunica is going to be the jockey on Latrobe. Is he following a similar path? Is this a short-term career as a jockey?
Yeah, definitely. There's no doubt Joseph has lived both of these have lived a very privileged life in that, you know, basically they're sons of the biggest trainer in the world, who's a multimillionaire, I presume. You know, I can't see how he wouldn't be.
But presumably, and I'm sure that was probably the butt, Joseph is out there working his backside off. He's not getting these out of his father's name.
No, I mean, he definitely had the family's association with JP McManus would have helped him when JP would have given him a lot of help early on. But Joseph quickly established himself as a very, very good trainer, you know, and Aidan would have brought up his kids in a very sort of humble manner, and you know, they're just great kids. They don't, no airs or grace about them. And Dunica's struggled manfully against his weight, because he's, there's no way, neither of these should be jockeys. But I didn't even think Dunica would be going.
What is he, 6 foot?
He wouldn't be 6 foot, but to ride at like so 9 stone, you know, you can be 6 foot and maybe get away with the National Hunt, but to be riding at 9 stone, he's probably, I'm going to guess he's about 5'10", 5'11" maybe. So to be riding at 9 stone, it's still very good going. He's obviously getting taller as well. I didn't think he'd even last this long. But he's a very chilled out character, Dunica. He's not. He takes things in his stride, and he probably knows that the end is nigh at some stage. But that's not stopping him.
This Saturday's Dubai Duty Free Irish Derby also notable because it is the 47th and final time that Des Scahill is going to call the Irish Derby, which is a pretty remarkable record. Here is just a clip of possibly one of his most iconic commentaries: 1986 Gold Cup. Don't run.
Run and skip. Don't run on the far side. Don't run, the fractional leader, Wayward Lad, battling his way into it, and here comes Forgive and Forget. It's Wayward Lad and Forgive and Forget. They're a length in front of Don't Run, and over the last, it's Wayward Lad from Forgive and Forget. Wayward Lad from Forgive and Forget. Don't Run is battling back into it, but it's Wayward Lad holding Don't Run and Forgive and Forget. They're racing up towards the finish. Don't Run is coming with every stride. Don't Run is going to win the Gold Cup. Don't Run has won it in the last stride from Wayward Lad. Close for third between Forgive and Forget and Run and Skip.
So many of the voices that we grew up with in Six Channel Land are bowing out, from the passing of Jimmy McGee, the retirement of John Motson. Barry Davies is stepping away completely this year as well. And Des Scahill, every single year he has commented on the Irish Derby since 1971. Didn't miss a single year. What made him so good? Because it's a bloody hard job commentating on horse racing.
Yeah, and it got harder as well with over time. There's probably more riding on it. You know, back in those days, Desi would have commentated for the racetrack really only, and maybe the betting shop that didn't have a picture. And maybe you could kind of get away with the odd mistake as well, because nobody could say. And I interviewed Desi a few years ago, and he did admit that, you know, if you make a mistake now in a race, say you call a faller that's actually a different horse, this is going to cost somebody thousands of euro in running
and
betting.
So with
the
exchanges and people are betting in running.
Yeah, it's now you're calling it for the race score, but the race score is almost the least of your concerns, because everyone else is listening on their phone or watching on their laptop, watching in the betting shop, you know, and I suppose Desi had to embrace that change. But I think ultimately what made Desi was his voice. He just had a voice that like no other. I know Gerry Hannan is, his heir apparent is slagged because he sounds like him. But Desi, I think he, you know, Gerry would have looked on Desi like we would have looked on maybe Marco van Basten growing up. He wanted to be a commentator and he was his idol. And there's a famous photo of Desi commentating in Listowel with Gerry behind him as a teenager. And Gerry had a lot more hair back then. But it's a beautiful photo, and he always looks back on it fondly. But Desi, he was passionate. He didn't editorialise. He just called it as he saw it. He called them in race, kind of in the order of where they were in the race. And on days like Dawn Run, what my mates might call Grade One Desi in the really good races, he was pumped, you know. And
he had the gravitas at the right moments.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that Desi really, I would be a big, big advocate of that, like context. You know, if you're commentating on a race on a Monday, I don't care, you know, what difference it makes to the owners. You know, you have to have a bit of perspective. Don't get too excited. It's a bad race. Desi's very good at that. He got excited for the big races. And, you know, there's a strange sadness for me and for, you know, I was brought up, when I got into Irish racing, I would spend hours and hours doing impressions of Desi Scahill, doing commentaries. I'm not doing impressions.
Go on. You can't say that, Johnny, and not do it.
No, I'm not going to do impressions. But
Don't Run. Go on.
No. I wouldn't get into doing impressions of the great man now. But he was an icon. And then when you got to meet him, he's a good guy and loves Man United, loves the football. He'd probably talked more about football than anything else, but earned the respect of everyone. And I think maybe it could have been handled a bit better by the Association of Irish Racecourses. You could tell there was an element of bitterness about the departure for him, in that they kind of just didn't really explain it, just kind of said, yeah, like that's how it is, you know. And I think after all of his year of service, albeit getting paid for it, maybe his role in Irish racing will be right up there with very few people, because he was an icon. I think he might have deserved maybe a bit more bit more respect from AIR.
Yeah, unfortunately, it seems to be the way with a lot of the people who are bowing out and retiring from the media at the moment. Very quickly, who's going to win the Derby?
I'm going to take a chance on a horse at a big price here. It being the year of the underdog, I'm going to go with Platinum Warrior for Michael Halford, who's by Galileo. He's a bit quirky, but he holds, you know, La Trove on their running over a mile and two the last day. He definitely has his own ideas, but I think 25-1 each way, he could be one to get Desi excited.
Good stuff, Johnny. Football shows up next.
Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106-108.